Okay. Oh, good. We are live. This is February 20th, Miles Report 2018. And.
Oh, smokestack lightning!
We got something today. Yeah. So, I'm turning on my little camera here. And you can find me on Greg From Tracks. Oh, let me say that on camera. You can find this on Greg From Tracks at YouTube.com, but this is a stipulation regarding discovery disagreement, and it says, in compensation for 8602 arrest of plaintiff releaser while in the public right-of-way at 5300 Portugal Highway and while cited only for an infraction in violation of constitutional rights, defendant releaser has agreed to pay plaintiff releaser $76, the sum originally paid to government by plaintiff as fine in the case. Plaintiff releaser intent is to not contribute to the crime behind this anniversary and location, rather to profit. Wait, let me start that over. The sum originally paid to government by plaintiff as fine in the case. Plaintiff releaser's intent is to not contribute to the crime behind this anniversary and location, rather than to profit from acceptance of the sum. In consideration of the above noted payment and barring a repeat of the above noted violation, the undersigned plaintiff releaser releases City of Concord from all further responsibility in the case. And I just added my little handwritten note to the stipulation regarding, the dismissal of my case against the City of Concord because it was the Northern Command's agent, Chad Watson, who was the MP who had me arrested, and he was a reserve officer in Concord. So, anyway, this is, shall I just click? No, let me just go back to, okay. Howl Wolf?
Shining,
and then we'll get into real time testimony, but the sound quality is so bad that I'm going to have to find my original that I was reading from. Wolf and Larry. Okay, so behind that stipulation was the challenging the right to terrorize, copyright 1988 by William Callison. It was Jim Wilcott's neighbor, and it's self-explanatory. Does the CIA have the right to spend tax dollars to assemble, instruct, and pay a group of political assassins? Do such activities violate or unlawfully threaten the right of U.S. citizens? If evidence is produced that government has instructed and paid such assassins, to what court can a citizen go to get a hearing on his rights? These are deep and unfortunately relevant questions which federal courts exhibit no interest in answering. But Greg Getty is a persistent man. He has been trying to make the courts answer these questions and other like it for 3 years. On Friday, July 15th, he will have his day in court. The court will be U.S. Federal Court for the Ninth Circuit, meeting in San Francisco at the Post Office Building at 7th and Mission in Courtroom 2 at 9 a.m. The issue will be Getty's appeal of a district court ruling of August 1986 denying federal court jurisdiction in his lawsuit against the CIA. About September 1984, Getty contacted the FBI office in Reading to give them information about the murder of foreign civilians by government employees. But when he mentioned Latin America, FBI agent John Rieger was no longer interested, and the information his office received from Getty was not transmitted as required by federal law, USC 535. To the Justice Department for investigation and possible prosecution. This failure is cited by Getty as one of the general causes of action for his suit. The other cause he cites is his status as a taxpayer and his right not to have his tax money expended for unlawful and unconstitutional purposes. He He cites the case of Flass versus Cohen, in which a non-Catholic sued successfully to prevent federal tax money from going to support Catholic schools. If Ms. Flass' religious principles gave her standing to prevent the spending of money on Catholic instruction, he believes, this religious principle are even more violated by the practice of murder, torture, and mutilation with his money. The government responded to his suit with a motion dated January 10, 1986 to dismiss him to quash service, in which they argued it is questionable whether the Nicaraguan victims, whose existence is implied by Getty, would have any legal claim under American law. As foreign nationals in foreign countries, the victims would enjoy no rights under the Constitution or laws of the United States. Propriety of the plan itself seems to raise a non-justiciable political question, unquote. This reply ignored the federal law against killing foreigners, 18 U.S.C. Section 1116-1117, already cited by Getty. It also failed to address two other claims of Getty. One, that as a medic who might travel to Nicaragua, he was placed in jeopardy by the assassination squad. And two, that since present or former members of such squads are protected from exposure by criminal law, the Intelligence Identities Protection Act, he was personally jeopardized even if he remained in the U.S. He pointed out that assassination of at least one American, Ronnie Moffitt, in September 76, along with ex-Chilean official Orlando Letelier, has already occurred at the hands of CIA-funded assassins. As for the argument that propriety or funding death squads is a political question, Getty reminds the court that the Congress has never authorized such activity, that it is undertaken completely outside the scope of any congressionally conferred authority. Nevertheless, the district court dismissed his suit on the grounds that he lacked standing since he had not shown that he had suffered an injury. Now Getty is appealing that ruling. Will federal courts recognize any responsibility to prevent assassinations by federally sponsored death squads? On July 15th, Greg Getty will take another step in his quest to find out. Of course, Bill Callison could not get the article that he wrote on my behalf published, and alas, only Nuremberg Action's last staff person showed up at the court. Thank you, Jennifer.
You have no standing.
You have no soul. No soul. Title 28, okay, just like crimes are based in Title 18. That's what standing is. Certain, I believe, is a chemical tank of some sort. Because if a war were started, then it would be a direct target of Hezbollah missiles, and they would end up, you know, hurting, if not killing, a lot of civilians. And what's interesting is that it was shut down, so that could be good, but that also then sounds like a preparation for war. Nasrallah has also called for Israel to shut down its nuclear facility in Dimona. We've talked about whether the Netanyahu potential indictment might change anything in Israel. And yes, it would be a good thing. At the same time, he's like a cornered rat, and I don't see the actual ethical principled leadership that would be able to step in there. All you have is people who are trying to out warmonger Netanyahu, whether it's people like Avigdor Lieberman or Naftali Bennett, who are basically threatening war crimes.
So this unnecessary war, according to Professor Landau, may be necessary to either keep Bibi out of jail or empower his political rivals, who are even worse than he is. It's certainly a mess over there. And a lot of this is all about Israel's paranoia about Iran and Iran's principled stand that Zionist apartheid has to end and that everybody in Palestine needs to be free and equal. And so here we have the War on Iran section of our show beginning with French President Emmanuel Macron telling us that the nuclear deal, under which Iran completely gave up its internationally recognized right to enrich uranium, is now not enough. We need another crackdown on Iran. This time they can't be allowed to build any missiles. What's next? They can't have guns? Their army can't have airplanes and tanks and whatever? I mean, come on. It's a sovereign nation, people. This is ridiculous, and it just shows how France has fallen completely under the control of the Likudnik faction in Israel ever since the post-Iraq invasion period, when France was actually standing against the 9/11-induced attack on Iraq and the Middle East. And so then all sorts of resources were deployed to bring France back into the Likudnik camp.
Yes, and if there were a country that's actually under suspicion of staging terrorism in France, or threatening terrorism against France, let's say, it is not Iran. And if people were to go read the book that you put together, We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, they would see that the evidence points in the direction of more like Israel, NATO, the U.S., treasonous forces within France, these types of things. And meanwhile, we know that that from Martin Kreveld, I think his name is, the Israeli, I believe he's a professor, he says that, yes, Israel has nuclear capability pointed at cities in Europe as part of a Samson option, okay? Where is the surveillance on the Israeli Samson options that are not only nuclear but are also increasingly come out of the Talpiot program and have to do with something like kill switch diplomacy and the ability to turn off the grids of all sorts? And as we saw in the U.S.-Israeli project of the Stuxnet virus that was complemented by actual black op assassinations of Iranian scientists by Israel, where they actually put together, U.S. and Israel put together the Stuxnet virus and shut down large industrial portions of the Iranian nuclear program. And that in some way was also a threat to the other countries of the world about what the U.S. and Israel could do technologically in terms of turning off people's grids.
Oh, that's right. And I think that this, when you say that the Europeans should be more concerned about the Israeli nuclear terrorism that's pointed at them, we should remind ourselves that the Germans are actually selling the Israelis these nuclear-armed submarines that very likely will fire nuclear missiles into Berlin and Hamburg and so on and incinerate Germany. That's the real terror threat against Europe. And the Europeans are not only facilitating it, they're actually handing the Israelis the very nuclear weapons that Israel is threatening to use to blow up the European cities. And Iran is doing nothing remotely comparable to that. So you're right, Jeremy, let's surveil that Israeli missile program first. And Iran is always being reviled for its supposed hatred of Israel. It's anti-Semitic. They had a conference where the Holocaust was questioned, although actually not by the majority of participants, but the media won't tell you that. But Iran actually has a thriving and growing Jewish community, which is quite happy to be Iranian. And we have this latest RT report in the next slide that, in fact, Jews feel safer in Iran than they do in the U.S. and the European Union.
Just like the Zionist so-called leaders sold out the Jewish masses across Europe in order to create a blood sacrifice in order to create an idol, a state power idol, rather than to actually be godly and follow Torah in relationship to not forcing God's hand. You also have the prevalence of
of early Zionist black ops all throughout the
You cannot do this. You can't do it. Explain what he said that you're objecting to.
Dude, he's calling fucking God, my God. He's calling the Zionists. He's calling the Jewish. Never mind. Just don't play it. Please. Please don't play it.
Well, you gotta explain it.
Because you're talking about the Torah. You're saying.